a story that spans 50 years.
First magical moment when I saw a tiger in Ranthambore, it was absolutely mesmerizing. It's a moment where you lose yourself somewhere within yourself.
One fortress home.
This is the best place in the world to see wild tigers.
One tiger clan.
For centuries, India's rulers battled over Ranthambore Fort. Today, it's home to a family with an extraordinary story.
Once hunted by royalty, a photo showing Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip posing with a group behind a dead tiger. Behavior never seen before. Two tigers tussling amongst trees. One man who's devoted his life to keeping them alive. A bearded man with brown skin and a mop of dark hair.
It's about what you don't know is going to happen. And that's the great joy of Ranthambore.
And five tigers who survived against all odds. Black and white footage showing a hunter with a rifle standing over a tiger thrashing about in a net. Then hunters posing with a dead tiger. My Tiger Family with Valmik Thapa. Old color footage showing a lake set amidst a grassy landscape dotted with shrubs and trees.
March 1984. A day that rewrote tiger history. I was helping my brother-in-law Tejbir film a tiger as it watched sambar deer feed in the lakes.
A deer lifts its head.
What happened next shocked us.
Partially obscured by long golden grass, a tiger is standing motionless, save for the slight back and forth movement of one ear. It lifts its head, peering through the grass at the deer, standing in knee-deep water. A vulture suddenly takes off from a leafless branch, and the tiger bounds out from the grass and into the water. Surrounded by a cloud of white spray, it charges at one of the fleeing deer, quickly closing the gap between them and dragging it underwater. The deer's neck is grasped in its jaws.
No one had ever filmed a tiger killing in deep water before. But then no one had really filmed wild tigers at all. And I was there, in the heart of it.
Modern footage of reddish-brown buildings on a cliff.
In the jungles of northwestern India, there is a magical fort called Ranthambore. It has stood for more than 1,000 years.
A red-domed building sitting by the edge of a lake.
There are three lakes, a few hundred feet from each other, and it's full of wildlife.
Deer grazing, a male peacock displaying its fan-like tail, a vulture perching on a branch, then crocodiles swimming with the tops of their heads above the water.
Something happening every minute.
A crocodile snaps its jaws at small leaping fish, and a tiger arches its back as it stretches with its eyes closed.
More wild tigers live in India than anywhere else on Earth. And this is one of their most important strongholds.
A tiger moving through water.
And when a tiger walks through the lakes, the sound, the magic, the explosion of activity.
A tiger runs at large birds, sending them scattering.
Yes, the lakes, a place to die for.
The sun sitting low over distant mountains, staining the sky dark orange.
But in 1976, when I first came to Ranthambore, it wasn't known for tigers. Back then, no one really knew anything about wild tigers, myself included. I'd grown up a city boy. I was very busy in Delhi making documentary films. My first marriage was collapsing. And one afternoon, I just walked out of my house, leaving everything behind, and caught a train to Ranthambore.
The red domed building.
I went on a whim to escape the city.
It took me nearly a day to meet Fateh Singh, the director of the park. And he looked me up and down and said, "What do you want?" I said, "I want to go to the forest." He said, "But nobody goes to this forest. It's an unknown area."
When I was passing the old gate, as you went past the gate and you crossed the rise of a hill, there in the distance was Ranthambore Fort looking at you. And it grabbed me.
And that moment changed my life. I wasn't a scientist or a naturalist, an activist or a conservationist. I was simply a filmmaker who fell in love with the beauty of this place and with its tigers. For the next half century, I've had the great privilege of being amongst them.
Photographic slides.
All tiger life revolves around the female, and across the decades, five tigresses became like family. Now, for the first time, I'm able to piece together the story of their matriarchal clan and tell you how these five revealed the secret life of tigers. None are closer to my heart than my first Ranthambore tiger, Padmini. She lived through some very dark times.
People sitting in a large room dimly lit by small candles, watching black and white footage of tigers being hunted on a projector screen.
Not that long ago, people estimated that there were 100,000 tigers in India. When Europeans and their guns arrived in the 18th century, a massacre began.
Hunters posing with three dead big cats.
It makes me sick to think of the Maharajas, the queens and kings who flushed out tigers and hammered them with their guns. I mean, one of our Maharajas, just one single man, killed 1,300 tigers and boasts about it.
A hand stroking tiger fur.
The kings, the rulers, the emperors, the rich, they all had tiger skins in their house.
I mean, even the Duke of Edinburgh and Queen Elizabeth had gone to Ranthambore and shot tigers there.
A photo of an Indian woman with dark greying hair.
In the early 1970s, the Prime Minister Indira Gandhi banned tiger hunting. A census had revealed that there were just 1,800 wild tigers left in India.
The Red Fort, a grand red building with large domed watchtowers.
And she set up Project Tiger. It was a wildlife conservation program with one aim: to protect India's remaining tigers. In this land where the tiger roams, it is not only an animal, but a symbol. For thousands of years, India has had a culture that goddesses ride a tiger to defeat evil.
A young boy dancing with his body painted like a tiger.
The tiger is sacred, the guardian of the forest. In 1973, we set aside 9 areas of the country for tigers. The old fort of Ranthambore, with its lakes and forests, was the smallest of these special tiger reserves. And then began a long, difficult task, rehoming the many people and cattle that lived within the boundaries. Such sacrifices were made for the tiger. Now, in the heart of Ranthambore, it was thought that just 12, maybe 13 tigers remained. And they only
ever came out at night.
Silhouetted against the burnt orange evening sky, a peacock takes flight from a tree, its long tail feathers rippling behind it. The moon reflected on the gently rippling surface of a lake. On a dirt track, a man standing in an open-top 4x4 aims a torch at nearby trees.
I didn't think I had a hope of seeing one, but I went out anyway with some of the park guards and a searchlight to try.
Black and white night vision footage shows an owl and a deer with large branched antlers.
Anywhere and everywhere, just couldn't find tigers. The director of the park, Fateh Singh Rathore, had slowly become my tiger guru. He knew every inch of this tiger reserve. Huge twirling moustache. Very tough, with a great sense of humor.
Bats flying in front of a full moon, then a 4x4 trundling up a track.
And one day, we drove too close to the water. So we were floating in the shallow water of a lake.
Water dripping off a tiger's belly.
A head appeared. It was my first Ranthambore tiger. We called her Padmini.
A black and white photo of the big cat lounging on the ground.
I was 23 and I'd never felt such a connection to any living thing before. How sad that these few photos are the only record of my times with her. But she deserves her place in this history. She went on to have 5 cubs. 4 survived.
Tigers lying amongst trees.
And it was the beginning of Ranthambore's clan of tigers. She led that clan. She was like the godmother of all the tigers I've known in Ranthambore. And she was the mother of my next tiger, the one who brought me the most joy, Noon, the beginning of Ranthambore's golden age.
Old color footage showing a tiger lying on its front in a stone pavilion.
In the 1980s, Ranthambore was a place transformed.
A tiger stops in its tracks by stone ruins.
Tigers shed their nocturnal cloak. They suddenly had no fear of man. And the visibility, the low savanna grasslands here, meant you could see tigers and watch their behavior like nowhere else on earth. Noon was my favorite. She was called Noon because she was really active at noon. Noon was a delight. She was absolutely the opposite of Padmini. She was the new generation of tigers that had grown without the fear of man.
Noon is guarding a carcass in long grass when another tiger trots over.
I watched Noon drive away other females, fight them over prey, force out her sister.
She gets the other tiger on its back, and the two of them viciously swipe at each other with their paws.
I began to understand that the few square kilometers around the lakes were her territory. She had claimed the richest tiger turf, one teeming with prey, and now the hunters and people were gone. It was a tiger paradise, pure magic. It was around this time that I bought some land on the edge of Ranthambore. More and more, this is where I wanted to be, alongside the tigers, learning more about their lives.
Valmik's watching his footage.
Ah, wow. This is Noon's mate, a big male called Genghis. One day, back in 1983, he had appeared suddenly by the lakes. From where? We don't know. No one was monitoring the tigers in those days. What we did know was that males move around much more than females. As adults, they leave their family. They seek out new, big territories that give them access to several females and lots of prey. Areas like the lakes.
Deer moving through water.
I remember a day, a few months after he arrived. Sambar deer had congregated in huge numbers to feast on succulent water plants.
Deer munching on the vegetation.
But deer weren't the only animals in the water. There are about 120 crocodiles in the lakes.
Two deer are swimming along when a crocodile glides up behind them. One of the deer thrashes as the reptile bites down on it. Then it floats, nearly motionless.
It's one of the only places in the world where sambar deer face both predators. We thought tigers only hunted them on land. But then we saw Genghis make that extraordinary kill.
In the water, a deer standing on its hind legs bats another with its front hooves before dropping onto all fours. His body hidden, the male tiger is staring out at the lake from the long grass. The tiger lifts his head slightly, staring straight ahead. He suddenly comes tearing out of the grass and bounds into the water, his paws kicking up spray. The deer bolt, but the tiger catches up to one of them and clamps his jaws on its neck. He wades back in the direction he came, dragging the weakly flailing deer with him.
I couldn't believe that I was seeing an enormous tiger rushing into the water, killing a sambar. And we were lucky.
The big cat shakes droplets of water off himself as he emerges from the lake.
This was the time to record for the world what Ranthambore was giving, because so far the world had no real wild pictures of tigers. And Ranthambore's tiger population was growing. There were 13 tigers when I first arrived. Now we thought there were 45. They were the best days of my life. Days I thought would never end.
A young Valmik walking past long grass, squinting in the sunlight.
I thought I would have another season with Genghis. I didn't know, but that was the last time I saw Genghis in my life.
The male tiger turns and pads away across a stretch of grass by one of the lakes. Now footage of Valmik driving along a single-track road bordered by dense jungle.
When it happened, it was like a nightmare. Sometime in 1991, I was with Fateh Singh, my tiger guru. And we were wondering what happened to a few of the tigers that we were watching. We could no longer find them. And Fateh Singh felt that they were missing and maybe they could have been poached. And I said, no, not possible. Who would poach these incredibly beautiful animals?
From the clifftop fort, Valmik stares out at the jungle with a furrowed brow.
But then began a year of horror. Poachers started to be caught with skins.
Dark clouds drifting in front of a full moon. Then a trap resembling metal jaws slamming shut on a piece of wood.
It knocked Fateh Singh and me out. We just couldn't believe that this was a possibility.
The price of bones is soaring as tiger numbers plummet. India's tigers are being murdered so the Chinese can turn their bones into folk cures for fevers and rheumatism.
Valmik speaking in the news report.
I think the population all over India is going down. I think the primary reason for this is poaching and the bone trade to meet the Chinese demand for medicinal derivatives. I think the tiger faces probable extinction in the next decade.
Fazil Singh had no time for poachers. If he found a poacher, he'd charge after him, take him to jail. He believed that that was the only way Ranthambore would survive. And he was beaten up himself. He nearly died. His driver jumped on his body to save him and took the beating.
In the present.
This is a letter my tiger guru, Fateh Singh, wrote at that time. It is a massacre. When the police chief showed me the skin, I could not control myself. Tears were rolling down my cheeks. It's heartbreaking, and sometimes I feel guilty that I taught them to have faith in human beings. All the tigers were shot at point blank range, just innocently looking at the man with the gun. I think both Fateh and I felt that over the years we'd worked very hard with the tigers, they'd lost their fear of man. And they treated the poachers in the friendliest of ways, and they lost their lives.
A tiger lounging on the ground with the fort as a backdrop.
Because by now we had learned to identify individuals by their stripes, we could say with certainty that 30 tigers, tigers that we knew, were gone. Around the lakes, just 15 terrified tigers remained, and I was determined to do all I could to keep them alive. I entered the arena of government, sat on endless committees. I started a charity with local people. I wrote books. I made a TV series.
I'm Valmik Thapa.
It was the most time I'd spent away from Ranthambore. But then, my next Lake Tigris drew me back in.
Matchley, 2000s. Bathed in sunlight, Matchley is blinking slowly as she plods along.
Of all the tigers, she's the one who would teach me the most about the tiger's life. We called her Matchley, which means fish, because she had marks like fish bones on her cheek.
Matchley is a cub, hanging by the scruff of her neck from her mother's mouth.
She was born during the crisis. And for the first 2 years of her life, she had stayed with her mother, as all tiger cubs do.
Matchley and her mother are by a deer carcass.
She's all absolutely alive. Yes.
One cat grips some flesh on the deer's stomach in her mouth and starts dragging it.
Now Matchley was nearing adulthood. I guess soon she would need a territory of her own. But when and how would she carve one out? Tigers communicate with each other silently. They leave their scent in their territories. This can attract conflict or repel conflict. And through this process of territorial marking, they talk to each other.
Fateh sitting with Valmik in a 4x4, snapping photos.
Fateh and I watched the pair closely, certain their time together was coming to an end. The lakes were rich with prey, but there was only enough for one resident tigress. Would her mother force Matchley out?
Standing in the shade of some trees, Matchley flattens her ears when she spots her mother approaching from one of the lakes.
The bond Matchley once shared with her mother was gone and replaced with aggression.
Matchley starts to move away, but she lowers her head when her mother nears. She flattens herself against the ground, but springs up and hits out with a paw when her mother lunges. She backs away, and her mother walks off.
This time, Matchley was the one to back down.
Matchley has a small round wound just above her left front leg. Her mother stops in her tracks momentarily and blasts a small amount of urine onto the ground. White long-necked birds standing at the edge of a lake.
At the edge of the lakes is my favorite place, Rajbagh, the ruined garden of the kings. Now tigers hold court here. I suspected Machli would soon try to overthrow her mother so she could rule these ruins.
Machli lies down.
Her mother too sniffed out the threat.
Machli remains prone at the edge of the lake, her tail and back legs submerged in muddy water as her mother approaches.
To me, Machli seemed a little afraid, but she stood her ground.
Machli suddenly springs to her feet and tumbles onto her back, slashing her claws at her mother's face. Machli stands in the shallow, muddy water, and her mother backs off. Machli's hind legs are stained with mud.
I wasn't sure who'd won the confrontation, but shortly after this, Machli's mother left. Maybe it was the threat of constant conflict. Maybe she sacrificed her territory for her daughter. Either way, Machli now ruled here.
Monkeys, lit by the evening sun, standing on the ruins of an old fort.
Later that year, Fateh and I realized that a new male had arrived at the lakes.
The male sniffs around in long grass.
He soon picked up Machli's scent. We called him Bumbu Ram. And gradually he got closer to Machli, leaving markers of his own.
Bumbu Ram sprays his scent against the trees.
Then, one day, Machli approached him. He was aged 6 or 7, and in his prime.
The imposing Bumbu Ram rises to his feet, taller and stockier than Machli.
It wasn't long before Machli decided she was ready to mate.
Machli lies down in the tall golden grass, and Bumbu Ram mounts her. As they mate, he aggressively bites the back of her neck. Then she lashes out at him, and they separate.
The ferocity of tiger mating always impresses me.
Machli takes a few steps away, then lies down again in the grass. Bumbu Ram climbs onto her back and continues to mate with her. Once more, he grips her neck between his teeth, causing her to turn and slash her claws at him. They snarl and bare teeth at each other, then both settle down into the grass.
I was excited by the thought of a new generation. It was like a new dawn. The dark days of hunting and poaching had long gone, I thought. This was the chance for the clan to truly thrive. It was a very happy time for me. I'd met my wife Sanjana and had a son, Hamir, named after one of Ranthambore's greatest rulers. And soon, Machli herself had a litter, 2 cubs.
Valmik observes from a truck as Machli brings a deer carcass to her cubs.
This is family life amongst the tiger. This is the beauty of Ranthambore. They're both male cubs, and she's really looking after them at the moment. Oh, wow, look at him. Learning the ways of the mother.
One of the cubs drags the deer by its neck. Machli relaxes on the ground as her cubs eat.
It was an absolute delight watching these boys grow up. And then one day, we heard rumors that trouble was headed their way. Their father had vanished, and a new male was patrolling the area. We called him Nick.
A deer and its fawn feeding in the shallows of the lake.
Without the protection of their father, Muchley's family were in danger.
I'm really worried about these two cubs because they're young male cubs. There could be a new resident male in the area, so the tigress has to be really careful. She's got to keep them well protected. She has to defend them and chase away any male intruder. In fact, she's bound to fight the male so that he keeps a distance from the cubs.
Nick brings down a deer.
Nick was a huge male in his prime. I shuddered to think what he could do to the cubs.
Nick clamps his jaws around the deer's neck.
He could easily kill them in order to mate with Muchley and father a litter of his own.
The serene water of the lake, reflecting the green and brown hues of the surrounding trees.
A few days later, I found Muchley being pursued by Nick.
Muchley pads along with her mouth open. A langur, a small monkey with fluffy grey fur around its black face, watches with alert eyes.
He was definitely interested in mating.
The langur vocalizes as the large male tiger circles Muchley. Muchley lies down and watches Nick. As he comes back over, she stands up.
Would she give in? Or would she try and fight him off?
The langur scurries away through the trees and Muchley swipes at Nick. Muchley moves and lies down.
At first, it looked like she was keeping away from Nick, so he couldn't get behind her and mount her. But Nick was really enticed by her scent.
Nick sniffs the ground, then advances forward, his piercing yellow eyes looking directly into the camera. He snarls, baring his sharp teeth.
Didn't look like he would give up.
A ferocious fight breaks out between the two tigers. They wrestle in the dirt, gripping each other with their front paws. The fight ends as abruptly as it began, and Nick tentatively retreats.
For Muchley, victory. For Nick, an injury that would make it hard to hunt. Now he knew the cubs had a mother who would risk it all to protect them.
A fly crawls over a cut on the pad of one of Nick's paws. Nick hobbles away. Sometime later, and the cubs are fully grown. Muchley walks along a dirt track.
A few months later, I saw the most extraordinary moment between a tigress and her cubs.
Muchley lies down in the road and one of her cubs starts to suckle from her. The second cub comes along and Muchley reaches a paw up to touch his face.
Muchley suckled them.
The second cub suckles alongside its sibling.
Her cubs were almost 2 years old. There would have been no milk for them at this age. Perhaps it was Muchley's way of telling them it was time to say goodbye.
A cub gets up. Machli presses a paw against him, and he licks her face. Valmik watches as the cubs walk on down the dirt road, and Machli slowly follows.
After that, everything changed. I never saw the family together again, and the cubs struck out to find territories of their own.
The sun goes down in the hazy sky.
In 2004, I was very busy with a Supreme Court committee, and we were hearing regularly that there was something going wrong in Sirisca. 150 kilometers from the Ranthambore Tiger Reserve, that poachers were out. Nobody was sure about it. The government of the day refused to admit that there was a problem, even though the director of the park was crying out for help. Every tiger in Sirisca by September 2004 had been poached and killed. Sirisca had no tigers, and then in central India, not so far from Ranthambore, the Panna Tiger Reserve, all the tigers went extinct then. So poaching took a massive turn.
Valmik and his team on safari with solemn expressions. An image of a tiger with its foot caught in a trap. Footage of a tiger skin being seized by the authorities.
When it happened the second time, it was the same Chinese pressure. It was the illegal trade and a new demand for ornamental tiger skins. It was again trying to keep your tiger safe. How are you going to do it the second time around?
Hundreds of tiger skins all laid out across the ground. A product containing tiger bone. A tray of tea and biscuits is set down.
Scattered Thoughts, June 2005. The future of the tiger is bleak. God help us.
A dark, stormy sky.
The monsoon of that year was a critical moment. It's a time when the rains lash the forest with incredible force. Ranthambore completely shuts down. The roads are washed away. The perfect cover for poachers to strike. I had no idea where Machli was or if she was still alive.
Monsoon floodwaters cascading through the ruins of a fort.
I kept busy in Delhi, working with the then Prime Minister to create a moment of huge change. In the end, Project Tiger was scrapped and the National Tiger Conservation Authority was launched. This time, because of various connections with the Empowered Committee, with the Supreme Court Committee, we declared a red alert and an emergency in Ranthambore. 200 armed men were sent in to surround the periphery and to flush out any intruder. And it created a scare. We knew that there were problems in Ranthambore. Fateh Singh, who had by now retired, said that half the tigers of Ranthambore had been poached, that there were barely 21 tigers left, terrified tigers who'd experienced a second round of poaching. I think the Lake Tigers must have known what was going on because on the edges of their territory, there were vacant areas. The tigers on the outer areas had vanished and the silence of death hung in the air. Every tiger on the lakes would have known that.
A clear blue sky over a lake in Ranthambore. The monkeys down by the water's edge, bathed in golden light.
Luckily, The area around the lakes was the inner sanctum. It was very difficult for poachers to get to the lake area.
A tiger stands in a window opening in a ruin.
So the lake tigresses survived because the area around is fortified. There are gates and entry points. There are lots of forest guards. So the poachers were not going to take a risk in this area.
Valmik and two others on foot within the park.
So the lake tigers kept on producing cubs that would go out and repopulate areas where tigers had been poached. And that's what happened. That's what saved Ranthambore.
And that's what saved Machli. She survived yet another crisis. And her final litter would grow up and spread out all over Ranthambore and beyond.
Machli and her three young cubs moving through an area of brown grass. A view of a valley covered with thick woodland. Valmik is looking at a map.
When I first went to Ranthambore, it was a tiny patch of 300 square kilometers. Today, adjacent to it are three tiger reserves, and we have 5,000 square kilometers where tiger populations can go to, where tigers can migrate to. That's success. That required hard work by a bunch of people.
Green parrots and the slender blue neck of a peacock.
And one of those people is my colleague, Dr. Dharmender Khandal. He has data of 20 years of Ranthambore's tigers. And that enables us to really look back and work out for the first time exactly how Ranthambore's tigers are related. Today, we know that Machli's genes are in 75% of all Ranthambore tigers, including my next tiger, Krishna, one of Machli's daughters, and a tigress that shook my being. She ruled the lakes for a while and had four little cubs of her own.
Four cubs trotting together.
It's very rare to find a tigress with four small cubs. And there was an incredible afternoon when she took her cubs and walked to the palace den.
She carries a cub in her mouth.
To get to the palace den, you have to cross a little bit of water. And that's where a few big crocodiles lie, waiting to get their chance on anything that passes.
Several crocodiles slide into the water.
She carefully negotiated the water, carrying the weakest cub in her mouth, while the others followed her.
Krishna slowly carries the little cub across a shallow section of the lake. The other cubs run behind her, their heads barely above the surface. The head of a crocodile ducks down below the surface. Krishna reaches the shore, and a crocodile suddenly dashes into the water. As Krishna steps up onto dry land with her cub, the crocodile accelerates across the lake. Krishna returns to the water and looks around, but all is quiet.
She lost one of the cubs.
The iron snout of a croc vanishes beneath the surface. Krishna ventures deeper into the lake while calling out. She stands on a small rocky island.
It brought tears to my eyes that day.
Krishna, in the distance, on the shores of the lustrous lake.
One of the cubs that survived still lives around the lakes today. She was named Arrowhead because she had two pointy eyebrows, like two arrows, on her forehead. She's family. She always surprises me. And I see much of her today. For a while, she ruled the lakes. But today, this territory is no longer hers, and she should not be here. Recently, she started behaving in unpredictable ways. I was startled when I saw on a camera's viewfinder Arrowhead arriving at the lakes and finding a way to attack an enormous softshell turtle.
Arrowhead charges, her huge paws splashing in the muddy shallows. Then she dives into the lake and catches the turtle. She grabs the turtle by one of its back legs and drags it back to the land.
And she not only grabs a turtle in the shallow water, she picks it up and rushes back into the grass and starts to devour it. Was she, like Genghis all those years before, not afraid of crocodiles in the lakes? Well, what I saw next made me think that she was not fearless, but desperate. Arrowhead's back in the lakes. And this time she chases after a small crocodile. She charges into the water, misses the baby crocodile, but she doesn't realize she's in a deep place and there are bigger crocodiles. The big crocodiles pounce on her under the water.
Amateur footage of thrashing in the water.
And I don't know how. She manages to free herself.
Arrowhead leaps and bounds out of the water.
And then, a short while later, someone filmed her eating a crocodile.
Deep within the forest, she chews on crocodile meat.
Suddenly, memories of years ago come flooding back. And I remembered that my nephew Jaisal had filmed this. Arrowhead's grandmother, Machli, wrestling and eventually killing a 4-meter crocodile. No one had ever recorded such a thing before or since. Severe droughts had driven Machli to behave in this way. What was driving Arrowhead?
Incredible footage of Machli wrestling a huge crocodile.
A few days later, we found out. She had been pregnant and in desperate need of protein for her milk. Now her cubs have been filmed, just weeks old.
Oh, they're lovely shots, absolutely lovely.
Arrowhead resting with her tiny newborn cubs.
It's amazing. This is really valuable, precious footage. They're barely able to crawl.
Two of the cubs are nestled up close to their mother.
Wow, it's amazing. This is the secret life of tigers.
One cub walks over Arrowhead. Valmik is sitting in an elevated lookout tower, writing notes.
But how will Arrowhead keep them alive? She no longer rules the lakes. And she's finding it difficult to survive. She's desperate because she has very little prey to hunt. Trespassing into the lake territory as she'd done before is much more risky with such small cubs.
An island in the middle of a lake. Valmik in the front of a safari truck, looking through binoculars.
Today, the lakes are ruled by another tigress, Riddhi. She too has 3 cubs, 3 mouths to feed. She's one of Arrowhead's older daughters from a previous litter. So now we have mother and daughter with three cubs each in bordering territories. What will happen? We have no idea. Which of them will survive? Will they meet? Will they fight? Will they play? I can't wait to see this new family drama play out. Today, 70 tigers live across this landscape instead of the 13 we began with 50 years ago. And I wonder which of them will become like family.
Valmik sitting at his writing desk with a framed image of a tiger on the wall next to him.
When I'm asked, what have I done with my life? The only answer I can give is this, that I have been amongst the wild tigers that roam Ranthambore's magnificent lakes and helped them to thrive. And my love for five tigresses in particular has molded me. Padmini. Noon. Machli. Krishna. And Arrowhead. Piecing together the story of their matriarchal clan has been the privilege of my life.
Machli suckling her adult offspring. Machli and Nick fighting.
They have been like family to me.
Two tigers grooming.
And I can only hope that this story of their secret lives will help others to love them as I do. And endeavor to fight for their future.
The magnificent amber eyes and orange black and white patterning of a tigress. My Tiger Family, Mike's Story. Mike Burkhead, producer and director.
Everybody's aware in the tiger world that this year is the 50th anniversary of the celebration of the establishment of Project Tiger, which has helped in conserving India's tigers. But for me, that didn't interest me in the film because I knew a lot of other people would want to pursue that, what I describe as a more political film.
A still image of Mike and Valmik.
But then Valmik rang me up from the edge of one of Ranthambore's famous lakes and said, there's this amazing tiger called Charger who specializes in charging into the lakes and chasing all the deer out. So I thought, should I watch telly, play golf, smoke cigars, or do this one more film? My first tiger film was initially not supposed to revolve around tigers. Because I was an evolutionary biologist, I wanted to do a film about the evolution of the peacock's tail. So I thought, I'll have to go to India to make it. And I took it to the BBC, and they said, yes, we'll take a film on the evolution of the peacock's tail for David Attenborough's Wildlife on One series. But you've got to make it the tale of the peacock and the tiger. The key thing that stimulated me to know that I could make a film was Valmik's three or four books on the tigers of Ranthambore, which were gloriously illustrated. The imagery, the evocative nature of this huge fort that sits on the edge of Ranthambore, and then the tigers that run in and out of the lakes through the lilies, past the crocodiles. It was like Disneyland for wildlife. I did my recce and went to Ranthambore.
The red domed building on the edge of a lake.
It was better than I ever imagined. It was magnificent and is magnificent still. But the weak link for me was getting tiger footage. Tejbir, Valmik's brother-in-law, who helped me on my peacock film, said, we filmed tigers in the 1980s. I think Valmik's got the footage. And so I went to meet Valmik. When he met me at the door, there's this big figure who I instantly knew was a star in the making, a hugely charismatic person. He realised I was passionate about conservation, and he was passionate about conservation. So I think it created an understanding where we could work together. But the nitty-gritty of that meeting was, Valmik, can you find your tiger footage? I had no idea what the tiger footage was like. We found some cliché dusty film cans under his desk, which turned out to have some phenomenal tiger footage. Valmik's most favourite tiger, Genghis, charging into Ranthambore Lake's killing deer. So that was an absolute wonderful moment. So after I finished that film, I instantly thought, this guy could present a superb landmark series on the Indian subcontinent. But the key was making Valmik Thapa into a presenter as opposed to a contributor. At the time we made Land of the Tiger, we were both 39, 40 years old. That created a little bit of chemistry where we got on very well. So I couldn't force Valmik to do something. I had to convince him, which is good training to be convinced, and he would challenge me a lot. But we're still working together 30 years on. He will ring me up periodically and say, Mike, there's this event going on, or there's this crisis going on. And this film is a product of exactly that. We definitely are friends, more than colleagues. It goes further than that for me. It wasn't that Valmik was just a presenter. It wasn't that Valmik was just a punter. It wasn't that Valmik was just a powerful character fighting for the good of India's tigers and its land. There were more aspects to his life that I appreciated, I think. We may have got older and more grumpy and lots more bits of our bodies ache without any doubt, but I don't think our passion for tigers and conserving tigers has diminished at all. Okay. Telling stories about tigers, especially this film, which might have quite a nice good news aspect to it, will both educate people and encourage them that there's hope. Not false hope, but it's important to give them hope that the tigers of Ranthambore, which have been through two significant crises, have come through. And a huge part of that is down to Valmik's enthusiasm and bullishness to fight and help save the tiger.
The sun goes down.
A little closer to home, meet the tigers, lions and even koalas of Longleat. Press red for Animal Park on iPlayer.